Welcome to Inflection Point Podcast, where we cultivate change from the inside out as we ponder the Cairo question. Will Cairo have to protest in his lifetime for the birthright to freely and peacefully exist in the skin in which he was born? We stand on the belief that dismantling racism goes beyond laws and legislation or politics and economics. Here, anti-racism activation is presented as an inside job where personal transformation and accountability impact social change. So take a seat at the anti-racism activation table with Inflection Point Podcast.
Well, hello, hello, and thank you for joining us for the newest episode of Inflection Point Podcast, where we are dedicated to the art of listening in authentic conversation. We challenge our audience to listen actively and intentionally for the purpose of self-awareness, understanding, and personal transformation, and ultimately, social impact. I am your host, Anita Russell, and here is a quick hello from co-host Mavis and Gail.
Hello, everybody. I'm Mavis Bauman.
Hi, I'm Gail Hunter, and welcome this evening.
Excellent. Thank you. So if you have been following us for a while, you know we've been doing this series entitled The Sankofa Generational Leadership Continuum. And we define this Sankofa Leadership Continuum as a through line running from historical leaders of the past to contemporary leaders of the present, to those who emerge as leaders, melding together historical and contemporary reality. This inspires activism, art, literature, ethnography, and research to fuel transformation. And we are blessed to have this incredible guest today. Her name is Franceria Moore, and she holds over 15 years of organizational leadership experience in the human services and nonprofit sectors, focusing on equity and belonging in organizational development, poverty education, and adult learning design. From 2019 to 2022, she led the redesign of the Kellogg Foundation's family-centered coaching framework and the design of the accompanying 12-month learning journey to support organizational adoption, helping to scale the family-centered coaching toolkit nationally. She felt that there was more being discovered about the power of coaching people experiencing poverty, and Fran began her journey as a social entrepreneur as the founder and managing director of Sankofa Leadership. Sankofa Leadership is leading the charge in the development of person-centered coaching, which starts from the that to be the best for others, we must first be the best for ourselves. So I'm going to stop talking at this point, and I'm going to pass the mic over to Fran and have her fill us in a little bit more on who she is, what she does. I am particularly interested in learning more about this person-centered thing.
Thank you so much for having me. It feels like such a wonderful honor and pleasure to be a part of the Inflection Point Podcast. Thank you so much for each for sharing your story and your journey and allowing all of us to come along on this, because it's a collective thing, right? So I just want to take an opportunity to say thank you for this moment, and I look forward to our conversation. Where do I begin? Who is Fran? Fran is a crazy, wild, very good person who really believes that people like you and I can actually have an impact that will not just change the world as we know it, but could have impact on the generations that follow. That's what we ultimately want to do. And so family-centered coaching is a major part of my career. It was wonderful being able to work on such a powerful framework and to help to develop the learning journey that goes along with that. What person-centered coaching does is take it just a step further, and it really ponders the question, what is possible when we help people honor their needs first? first? And how do we help people recognize their felt needs versus their perceived needs, right? We like to sometimes go what my wants are and what my needs are, right? And some of the things that that get categorized as wants, those are really important desires that we have. And sometimes, depending on where you run into, people say, well, you can really put your wants on the side and just focus on what you need. And so what person-centered coaching really looks to do is to provide support, particularly for individuals who are experiencing that takes into consideration they're whole, that they are perfect, and that they are complete at the core of who they are. And then there's just a whole bunch of other stuff that says, focus on your needs and not so much on your needs. Well, we want you to be able to do both. And so through person's coach, person sense of care, St. Coach is having the opportunity to support multiple organizations across the nation in adopting this approach to really center the individual rather than the systems that are weighing on the individual. You know, you mentioned it in the intro of this show that when we focus too much on those systems, what happens? Systems, I would argue since the 1930s when we got the welfare system, you know, under Teddy Roosevelt. Don't you think it's time for a little bit of a change in an approach, you know? And if we've been talking about this system for so long, when do we begin to talk about the person? When do we get to actually talk about the human being and the lived experiences and both their perceived needs and their felt needs? Meaning the needs that I feel every day. When I'm hungry, I feel it. Okay?
Yes.
Perceived need is, I think that if I get this degree, okay, that will meet a need for me. It's something that I perceive. I don't know yet because I haven't had an opportunity to grasp it. And so I agree, if we want to really do this work of racial equity and social justice and poverty reduction, we have to start with the number one player, and that's the individual who is receiving the services.
Excellent, excellent. So I read quite a bit about this person-centered coaching and how it explores pretty much to what you were saying, what becomes possible when we intentionally create space for someone to put themselves first in their own life. But right. This statement here, I think, is a really, really powerful. This small shift is electrifying the human services field and impacting the lives of clients and practitioners alike. Can you dig a little bit more into that, why you use the word electrifying? Because that is such a powerful word to use within this context.
Thank you for that question. I love words. I'm a words person. Bring it on. The more words, the better. You know, like I really get into helping people see a picture of something. When you think about something, you know, in the medical field, one of my favorite shows is Grey's Anatomy. Do you all watch Grey's Anatomy?
Okay. Yes.
I've probably seen at least every episode 3 or 4 times. I think I have at least half of a medical degree at this point. I love Grey's Anatomy. And one of the things that they show there is when a person like is their heart is not beating anymore. We're not getting breath through the body. They resuscitate. And what a resuscitation is electricity being sent to the heart of something so that it can revitalize itself. I think in our work so much, we focus so much on the, what do we need to do and the massaging of the system and this and that. When if we really just concentrated our effort on the heart of the people, they will do what is necessary in order to heal themselves. Just like we noticed with Mother Earth during the pandemic. I don't know if you all saw that thing that where it showed what happened just after the first 90 days of being inside. Yeah. The way that the planet began to heal itself. And that's the way we are all mirroring the same systems. And it works the same way in the work that we're doing. And so by centering the person, people who are doing this work are feeling reinvigorated that they can really make a change. You know, I've done direct services, and there is nothing worse than the feeling of someone coming in your office and pouring out their heart about what they need. And then you looking at the menu of services that you have to offer and going, I don't know how to help, you know. And for me as a practitioner, after 11 years of working in the field, I unintentionally slipped into what I like to call a fixing mindset. Every person that I saw the problems that needed to be fixed rather than the individual. Who was coming saying, I can do it. I need support. And so it's electrifying people because we got into this work because we want to have an impact, because we want to make a change. We could have done a million things. You know, almost in every room I go in, I ask folks, what caused you to get into this work? And, you know, I'm going to tell you the things that I don't hear. I don't hear for the money. Okay. I never heard that. Okay. Never heard for the money. I've never heard because they had a degree program in social worker two. Okay. Or whatever the title is that we get. Okay. It wasn't that. And it definitely wasn't because I think I know what's better for someone than they know for themselves. No one ever gets into this work for that. But unfortunately, because of the system that we're working in, here we go back with that system. We sometimes lose sight of what's mine and what's the culture of the organization. And so it's electrifying the field because it's giving practitioners who are passionate about supporting folks another option. That even if nothing about my job changes, nothing about this organization changes, I can change. And when I change, everything changes. And you mentioned again on that very just perfect intro to the show. So I encourage your listeners to write it back and listen to it a couple times a day because that's the answer. You all have given them the answer in the opening of the show. Spoiler alert, you know, the answer is start at themselves first. That's it. That's simple. That makes it sound really simple, right? That's all you have to do. You just have to center people.
The hardest work you'll ever do, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
And it's most beneficial.
And that's one of the things that when I first, I don't even remember how I initially ran across your name. I think it was when we were doing the, because we did Kellogg. A segment on the Kellogg Foundation. And talking about the family-centered coaching approach and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I've got a lot of admiration for the Kellogg Foundation. I've been using them as a resource for years in terms of the approach that they take, much more of a holistic kind of approach, communities and all of that. And so when I was reading about the family-centered coaching mindset, it referred to Franceria Moore. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I ended up on the Sankofa Leadership website. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I ended up on the Prosperity Agenda website. Mm-hmm. From there, I went to your LinkedIn profile and reached out to you because I saw a connection between who you are, what you do, and what this show is intended to be all about. And so some of those commonalities that you mentioned are the reason why all four of us are on this show today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mavis Gale, any comments?
Yeah, I always, I've been in my field as a therapist for 5 decades, right? But I've always taught people that you came here with everything you need, everything. It's the ability to be able to remember who you are and begin to take that apart and look at how you can apply that and start using that in your life. And that's exactly what you're talking about, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, we do have everything, but we need that somebody to support us. We need to be able to have some guidance and to know what path and what step to take next. And I applaud you. Good for you.
Yes, thank you. I want to just jump in right there to something you said, Gail, that I think is so apropos for this moment, because you said you were born with everything that you need. Mm-hmm. And our work here in this form is to remember that.
That's right.
It means it is not taboo to remember. You know,
and so
we talk about a Sankofa continuum. We're talking about entering a journey that allows people to remember the fullness and the wholeness they are. You know, we talk about limiting beliefs. A lot of what I go through in the mindset series is just about how we develop the beliefs that we have. You know, those aren't just things that popped up in there. You know, they're an amalgamation of your experiences. Things your parents have told you, things that, you know, they experienced that they're telling you, social climate, all kinds of things impact that. And so I also think one of the things that's electrifying folks is the moment to stop and pause and say, those thoughts aren't you.
Right.
Those are just thoughts. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's get to who you actually are. Let's talk about limiting beliefs. And when we do that with the practitioner first, okay, when we do that with people who have made their profession pouring out of themselves into other people, wow, Okay. I get stories of folks coming back in between sessions because we give assignments and just little tests are what we call them. Little tests, just see if it works, you know, no pressure. Right. And people will come back and they'll say, I had a 45 minute conversation with my 16-year-old son and he never wants to talk to me about anything. Wow. Why? Because there was a shift in their perspective. Okay. As the parent, I'm not going in saying, well, I want you to know this and that. I'm going in with curiosity and not judgment. You know, just even that little small shift. What's the difference between curiosity and judgment? What's the difference between nosiness and curiosity, right? When we begin to ask the right questions, we can get clear on who we are and remember. And the more we remember who we are, the more we have the keys to helping someone else remember. And that's it. You know, I mean,
be curious about the beliefs that you carry, right? And that's just an incredible, important step. Just ask, is this belief absolutely true? And how do I know it's absolutely true? Mm-hmm. Right? Those are the small steps, but they're huge steps. Yeah, that's great.
Absolutely. Yeah. And what you just said brought something to my mind. I am an on-call facilitator for the Center for Creative Leadership.
Yes.
And I'm in Washington, D.C. For the last couple of days or so because I was delivering a workshop on better conversations every day. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we imparted to the participant is this idea of being curious and asking questions, right? And that's being curious and asking questions in terms of listening to someone else's personal narrative. And being able to decentralize yourself to ask them questions.
Yep.
Not asking them questions because you're trying to validate what they say, but asking questions because you have a genuine desire to understand somebody else's life, somebody else's perspective other than your own. So when you made those comments about the curiosity and asking questions, it just took me right back to those workshops, the workshop that I had done this week.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's exactly what we want. And it's the most simple thing, but it is a commitment. You know, it is a practice. Just like a doctor practices medicine, a lawyer practices law, I practice coaching. I practice being person-centered. You know, I don't get it right. I have a daughter who's almost eight years old and she's autistic. There was no better learning ground for me to learn how to decenter myself because I had a picture of the kind of parent I was going to be. I had a picture of the conversations that we would have and the hobby she would be into and all of those things. And my daughter had a different need. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I had to shift. I had to make that change. And so as Mavis and Gail have both said, it's the hardest work you'll ever enjoy in your life, but it is work. You know, it is work and it's an intentional choice every time. It is to recognize yourself in your work as an avatar and to remove yourself and examine what you're doing and saying. How you're behaving and what you're willing to do and who you're willing to do it for. Okay. That's what it's about, is to be able to pull back and see yourself and be honest about that. But that can get icky, you know?
Yeah.
And painful.
I would love to throw in a thought here. Franceria, I love the words whole and complete, that every human being is whole and complete. And as Gail said, came here with everything we need. You know, in my educational experience working with corporations, it's a very top-down approach. What do these poor people need? And there's not that listening, you know? So I don't think I mentioned when we talked the other day that I'm doing some work with genocide survivors in Rwanda. So I think, you know, I've been very aware of this approach, and I just wanted to support them financially so that they can go to school and begin to apply themselves. They can have a full belly when they go and they can think, you know, but you bring to my attention the idea that I need to even change my conversations with them to help them really understand that they are complete and full of natural talent. But here's my question. Have you ever been around even a subsection of the population or a community where people are so much in despair that they cannot pull themselves up emotionally to even imagine themselves being complete? I mean, genocide survivors, I think, you know, would be a pretty good example. They, you know, so many of them are still in shock and then generationally reliving the trauma. So any thoughts for me on that? I'd like to be more help to them than I am so far.
Thank you for that question. And I think those are important questions that we should all continue to ponder if we're in a caring field. And I would even say outside of that, I'll scratch that, rewind, let's say it again. I think that it's something that everyone should have. It doesn't matter what field you're in at all. It's just good human practice, right? It's just good, solid principles for the way that I want to behave and the way that I want to support others in behaving. And that way is to see themselves as exactly that, whole, perfect, and complete. I have worked in communities where I've encountered people who it's really just all about survival, whatever that looks like, not just financially, it might be emotionally. Maybe they deal with, you know, certain things like depression and even seasonal depression. I've experienced that when I worked in place-based services, it would be the same person every year around the holidays or around the fall when it started to get cold and, you know, certain things would start to get sick. You start to notice that. And the first thing I'd say is it takes time. You know, it takes time. I think sometimes when we get started in this work, the fixer in us, and I don't want to demonize that. I want to clear that there are both of those things, kind of like how you have an angel and a demon on this side, and both of them are talking to you. Kind of think of it like that. We possess both of them, and they're neither good nor bad. We just want to engage with them at the appropriate time. Okay. If someone is experiencing a crisis, okay, Rwanda, extreme poverty, I just got kicked out of my house, I'm experiencing domestic violence, whatever it might be, okay? If they are experiencing a crisis, with their permission, you should more than likely engage in a fixing mindset, okay? If I'm not doing well, I remember one time, this is a crazy, I was like 19 or 20, I was a kid, and I thought my heart was broken, and I was driving, and this person called me, and I was a mess, and I could barely see, and the person who was sitting next to me had a license, and do you know they never said, pull over and let me drive so that we could get safe? Okay, that's what you could be doing when you're in a fixing mindset. I'm not doing this because you can't. I'm doing this because right now the circumstances are not allowing you to access the fullness of who you are. Okay, and whatever point that you feel safe and capable again, I'm willing to give you the wheel back. Okay. And so that's when we engage in a fixing mindset, right? And so for folks who are at that level, the place that you mentioned, it could be helpful in building relationship and building trust to support them in a way that says, what do you need me to need help with me doing right now? I'm going to help you solve that immediate need and get beyond that. And as we begin to make progress on that, you start to ask things like, and what else? What else might be important for you? Have you ever wondered, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, right now the Powerball is over $1 billion. That's literally the only time I pay attention to it. I only pay attention to it when it gets like these really big numbers. And so I like to ask things like, well, you know, the Powerball is over $1 billion right now. If you hit that tomorrow and money wasn't an issue, if money is their thing, what would you want to do? Okay. If we had 100% paid for nanny services for you, for your children, what would you be doing right now?
Yes.
And we just start to get curious. That's all. It all starts there. Every amazing thing we've done, you working with survivors of genocide, Gail, you working as a psychologist, Anita doing the work that you do as a powerful facilitator. It all started with what? An idea. And so it's not your work to tend the garden of their mind, but it is your work to plant the seed and water it.
Okay. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
And so I think that we can support anyone as long as we're willing to meet them where they are. And so if that means I'm helping you meet your immediate needs for 6 months, a year, whatever it is, while I'm doing that, I'm also asking, what else? What else could this look like? Mm. Even on a small scale, what else is possible in the next quarter that you might want to do? And then another thing, and I'll wrap this one up. And then what I like to do is once we kind of have some things checked off, I like to just pop back in every now and again and go, wow, I just want to take some time to acknowledge and celebrate you. We've done this, 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 and you've managed to this, and this. That's celebration and acknowledgement. Those are key skills for a coach, okay? Celebration says, I'm celebrating what you did. Acknowledgement says, I'm celebrating who you are. I'm recognizing who you are at your core, and you are not just a survivor of genocide. Okay. You are not just a person who is processing an emotional trauma. You are not just someone who works in a field trying to make change. Okay. You are someone who is also whole. You're also perfect. You're also complete. And all of those things start with an idea. So we can always be a part of ideation with someone.
Right. Excellent. Excellent.
Great response, man. I feel like I just had a session.
Exactly. That was amazing. So we have about 3 minutes or so before we go to break. And I'd like to ask you, can you talk a little bit about the work that you did with the Kellogg Foundation in terms of building that family-centered coaching mindset? Mm-hmm. So when I read that, I was like, oh, wow, that sounds so intriguing, that coaching mindset, not from the standpoint of you teaching people how to be a coach, but more from the standpoint of how does this now apply in their lives? Because I, as a practitioner, have that coaching mindset. So just give us the intro version, and then we'll continue the conversation after the break.
Okay, sounds good. Simply put, coaching is a mindset. It's a state of mind. That's it. Anywhere where you can help create the environment that makes change possible, you can be a coach. You can make change possible by even asking a question. The issue with the mindset is, are you engaging in coaching or are you engaging in fixing? Okay. And it's all about recognizing where the person is at the time. My house burned down when I was in the 10th grade and the fire truck showed up, and right behind them, you guessed it, it was the American Red Cross. It would have been preposterous for them to come to my mom, who's watching her house burn up, that she fought to buy for us, and say, what do you think about Fran's college future? It's like, well, yes, of course, that's important, you know, but it's not the priority right now. And so what mindset does is to help you recognize when you are putting yourself or what you have or the programs or the services or the way that you can fix ahead of the story of who this person is. And so the mindset is really that, like, if anybody out there has ever watched Family Matters, it's like going into the vault for Steve Urkel and coming out Stefan Arkell. Okay. It is really a change, a shift, where I say I'm making a decision to do whatever I can to put them in the driver's seat to the level of their comfort. Yeah. And so that's what the mindset is about. And I'll talk more about how I got to that and what I noticed in the field that felt like that was something that was necessary. Mm-hmm.
Okay, excellent. So we'll take a short break and we'll come back and continue the conversation.
All right, looking forward.
Are you ready to experience full body system wellness? Tune in to the Empower Me Show with Pam Bright, a spiritual toolbox for your life. Embrace the fullness of who you are as a spiritual being, having a human experience. Pam Bright is a multidimensional healer, light language channel, energy intuitive, and spiritual transformation coach. Join her for a rich conversation about how to unlock all your spiritual gifts on Transformation Talk Radio.
Designing Purpose, your guide to finding and pursuing the career you were meant for, with me, your host, Brooke Kretz, airing every second and fourth Thursday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Time, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. What if it were possible to leave the job you hate and pursue the career venture you were meant for while still earning the income you need? If you are curious about how I can support you, visit www.thepurposefulpractice.com.
Does your life often feel like an emotional tsunami where rogue waves crash down on you, leaving you feeling hopeless and wondering if it will ever end? Do you wish to awaken the dormant strength inside of you? Imagine what it would be like to turn your pain into purpose. Start today by scheduling a complimentary consultation with Martinet. Dive into your healing journey and begin to see your life in a new light. Visit martinetemmons.com and make your appointment today.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day, and we love to hear from you. Leave comments and questions for the host to address live, on the air, and get to know the faces behind the voices you love. Just go to Facebook and search for Transformation Talk Radio.
Yeah, yippee-skippy to that, baby.
Would you like to improve the quality of your life, be happier and healthier? Hi, I'm Peggy Wilms, host of the All Things Wellness radio show and best-selling author and the creator of the All Things Wellness Wheel. This is a free self-assessment tool that teaches you how to balance 24 areas of your life, from sleep, relationships, coping skills, home organization, nutrition, exercise, and so much more. Get the download today at allthingswellness.com and prevent your wellness wheel from getting up.
Welcome back to the Inflection Point Podcast and our discussion featuring Fanceria Moore, a generational leader experienced in the human services and nonprofit sectors, focusing on equity and belonging. So before we took the break, she started talking to us about this family-centered coaching mindset. So I'd like to pick up the conversation at that point so that our audience can learn a little bit more about that and how you built that into the work with the Kellogg Foundation.
Sure, thank you. I had an opportunity to take the Kellogg Foundation's family-centered coaching, introduction to family-centered coaching, session that they had. It was about a 3-day training. It was great. It was revolutionary. These were the things, you know, when you find your people. We kind of talked about this the other day, that feeling when people start talking to things that kind of make you go, "Ooh, I've never heard that before. That sounds like the kind of stuff that I'm talking about." And that's the way I felt, but it was 3 days, you know? And so I went back to my office, and then we got a call and said, "Well, hey, they have a trainer. Let's go do the trainer." And so two of my other colleagues, we went and we did that for the purposes of bringing it back to our organization and helping to establish it across our entire national portfolio. I also work for another national nonprofit called Operation Pathways. Great organization if you want to look them up on LinkedIn. But they provide place-based services by buying real estate and keeping housing affordable in areas that are experiencing gentrification so that folks can stay in their community, so that they can stay in their neighborhood and live somewhere in what they like to call vibrant communities. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because where you live also dictates how you feel, and how you feel dictates what you will think you can do, and what you think you can do will dictate what you do. And so we did that, and we brought it back, and we had 27 sites. We got everybody trained, and it was all good. And we had to figure out how to do that on our own. You know, we really had to like work with it a while. And so I got hired by the Prosperity Agenda. And here it was. I was the person who is now leading all of these trainings. The pandemic happened and everything shut down. Uh-huh. And what noticed in that 4 months where I got to be in a position when we were doing the 3-day model, not that there is anything wrong with it, but when we talk about shifts in mindset, when we talk about shifts in approaches, right? So we would talk about for a second, we had like a, you know how it is when you're making a training guide for yourself. If you've done any kind of facilitation, there was probably just like a one little section that said, well, we're going to talk about racial equity and the role that it has in being able to center people. And when I say it was the equivalent of a blink, okay, if you would have went out for water, you would have missed it, okay? And so we're talking to folks about changing fundamentally the way that they work and the way that they see people, okay? But we're not talking about the lens through which they are seeing people. So if my glasses get dirty, and I don't take them off and clean them, what I see is what I see. And no one can tell me that I don't see what I see. But it's not until we help people recognize that you can remove these lenses and examine the way that you're seeing the world to make sure that it's the view that you want to have, okay? That it is a view true to reality and not just one that you've created for yourself. And that doesn't just work for practitioners. What we're hoping is that practitioners will feel that the power of that in their life, and then they'll help to encourage someone else to find that level of awareness. And so when I had the opportunity to think about, well, how will we support our partners while everybody's on lockdown, right? That was the question. Well, how do we help this work? And I just felt that it was a great time to step back a bit. And let's think about, before we get to the how we do the work, the coaching skills and the approaches and all of the frameworks, because practitioners love a good framework. Am I right? Like, we love to go to a workshop and say, I got a new framework, I got a new book, you know, but what is it? How is it helping you think differently? And so the mindset series was kind of born out of an understanding from my personal experience as a frontline staff worker that it was about my mindset. Right. There's an article or a story or something. I forget. But it basically says that there was a fish in the ocean and they were swimming along and they passed another fish. And the fish that they were passing said, how's the water this way? And the other fish, and the fish looks at them and goes, what's water? Right. Yeah. If I live in this all the time, if everyone in my surroundings, everyone in my immediate environment is all having the same experience, we're not looking up and thinking anything's odd. And that was what was the like shock of for a lot of people in our country with the George Floyd tragedy. You know, where it was kind of like, I am jolted out of this world. And that's not a long word. That's not just for white folks or for brown folks. That was universally. Everyone was kind of having this reckoning of, oh, I've been going along to get along. And I did not really realize the impact of this, the very real everyday implications of this. Why? Because we're just moving around society. That's just what happens. And it happens even in our work in human services, where I stop seeing you as a person, not because I'm a bad person or not because I don't think you're a good person, but because I have not made a practice of examining my lenses. Okay. And so mindset really just wants to create the space and opportunity for someone to think to themselves. And you don't have to answer out loud, you don't have to tell your business, it's not confessional, you don't have to raise your hand, any of that, but you know when you go home and you're having conversations with folks, okay? It pushes people to think about, well, where did that belief come from? Is that my belief? Or is that just what I accepted as the truth? You know, do I really think it's important to finish everything on my plate, or was that just the household that I was born in? And now I have these behaviors where I overeat. Okay. You know, what are the things, why my behavior is just the outside part of it. There is a belief. There is a value even deeper than that. There's something that I value that caused me to create a belief. And now because of that belief, I behave and act in this way. Every single thing that we do, we're not complicated. Okay, input and output, that's all it is. And so until we start to notice what is going through my mind as I'm having this meeting, you know, I remember as a place-based practitioner, when I was developing the mindset, I go back to this story where I was helping someone look for a job. It was a woman, and I was helping her look for a job, and I only showed her jobs that fit what I would consider jobs to be a woman that a woman would be interested in. You know, clerical work, you know, office medical assistance, you know, whatever, like that kind of stuff, right? And then she saw another bulletin and she said, well, Miss Friend, why didn't you show me any of these jobs? And they were like truck driver, construction worker, you got to work overnight, all of this physical stuff. She said, these jobs make like 2 times more than the jobs that you showed me.
Wow.
You know?
Yes, that's sorry. Powerful.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Wow. I did not recognize that I had done that, you know, and, you know, and I had to really, I did not make that moment about my shame. You know, I acknowledged it. I want to acknowledge that I did that. I'm sorry. And even though I felt this big, I feel really small, everybody. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. It wasn't for me to put that on her. And so then what I had to do was go back to my community of coaches who are also doing the same work and talk about that experience and how I felt and what I needed to do to get beyond it. Yeah. Because we always have a choice. In that moment, I could have said, well, I ain't, you know, I mean, you're a girl, you know, I ain't think you wanted that. I could have did that. I could have made excuses for the decision that I made. And I might have been justified in the eyes of other people, right? But in that moment, it was not about my experience. It was about her experience. Wow. And so mindset is just, it's ruined my life in all of the best ways, okay? because now I can't just get away with, I just did that. I don't know. I just did it. You know, as a kid, I don't know if you all had it, but as a kid, my mom couldn't stand when she would say, why did you do that, friend? I said, I don't know. I just did it. I don't know. And she would go, that's not good enough. You need to think about what you did. She would make me process it with her. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing when we start to really open up our mindset. It's gonna hold you accountable. And it's going to say, well, why did you do that? And it'll nag you to the point where you make a decision. Yes, I want to face this and work through it. No, I don't. Let's close the door. And I'm going to keep going along and get along. But you know, if you choose that door, you know what you lose when you choose that door, you lose the right to say, I don't know.
Yes.
What is implicit has now become explicit, and you had a choice in it now. Yeah, and so that's why people go, oh, be careful. You go over there messing with that friend's mindset class.
Yeah, that is so powerful. Everything that you just said. I want to shift the conversation just a little bit and talk about the idea of Sankofa leadership. And I had read somewhere in some of the writings that I had read about who you are and what you do, doing an old thing in a new way. So can you talk a little bit about that, the leadership and what you meant by doing an old thing in a new way?
Absolutely. You know, I'm a country girl. Okay. I'm a Southerner. Every bit of me is Southern. Okay. And so there are a lot of little sayings and whatnot. And one of the things that I remember my grandfather saying is an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Okay. Another thing that he would say all the time is there's nothing new under the sun. Everything we've done all of this before. And then we've all heard this one that, you know, no need to recreate the wheel. Okay. I disagree. Roads change. The way that we operate changes, and there may be a need to recreate the wheel. And so doing an old thing in a new way is really our way of saying, how are we taking the information that we've learned over the last almost nearly 100 years? That's really what we're coming up on in human services as a field in this country. How do we take what we collectively know, and how do we change our approach to poverty reduction? It is actually embarrassing to live in a country that we live in with burgeoning opportunity and yet have multiple classes of people who are not able to access the opportunity that they say is available to every American born here or not born here, whatever your status may be. And I would even take it outside of a national thing, and I would even just say as a human being. You know, what are we really doing to help move us all forward? How are we helping to raise the level of consciousness about their power? And so doing a new thing in an old way is about, I'm not saying vanquish poverty reduction. Okay. What I'm saying is, how do we do it in a way that's more effective? And the way that's more effective is by centering the person. And the same way in leadership, Mavis talked about working in organizations that have a very heavy top-down approach. And everybody loves the language. We get really excited. We're just like, we're going to turn it upside down. We're going to flip the paradigm. We're going to, you know how we get. We get really excited. Yep. Like, we're going to switch this whole thing around. And it sounds great, right? It sounds great. But how do we actually do that? How do we actually make that change? And the way that we do that is through centering the individuals that we lead, okay? Have you all ever heard of the model of servant leadership? Robert Greenleaf?
Yes.
Absolutely. One of my, I consider her an ancestor of mine, Ella Baker, a phenomenal civil rights leader. If you are not familiar with Ella Josephine Baker, please, I'm encouraging you, please go read her work if you're particularly interested in how you lead these type of change initiatives, because she took that servant leader approach and applied it to intergenerational leadership development. I have the power as an established civil rights person, and what I'm going to do with my platform is gather a group of young folks, and that's SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, mm-hmm. coordinated SNCC and gave them the power and said, I am here as an advisor to you because you all know what your generation will need. Mm-hmm. It's those kind of examples of folks who have intentionally done things to recreate the wheel and to do something in a different way, and mm-hmm. also to provide prevention, okay, of disaster or prevention of increased poverty, whatever it might be. So that's really what it's all about. It's the same work, right? It's the same work. It's the Cairo question, right? Mm-hmm. It's the Cairo question. How many times are we going to have to restate this question? We don't want to keep restating this question, so we need to do something in a new way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So I have another question, and this has to do with the power of storytelling. So can you talk a little bit about how you see the power of storytelling through that coaching lens, empowering anti-racism, equity, prosperity? So what role does storytelling play for you?
Storytelling is near and dear to my heart, and it started all the way back when, I'm kidding, but I learned the power of storytelling because my mom used to take us to the local library. She was getting her degree, and she was over there in the archive section where they had those big machines and the newspapers, and she was going through the thing and doing her research. And in the children's section, they would have a group, and they told African parables at our library. And it would start off as a small group, and before he got midway through the story, the whole children's section would be filled with parents and students. And I remember sitting there utterly astounded that this person could tell a book. And I loved reading books. I was the kid that asked for money for the book fair so that I could go actually buy books because I loved reading as a kid. And it was amazing to me that someone could stand in front of a room and tell a story and I could see exactly what he was telling us. And there was no book in front of him. That he knew how to change his voice for the characters and all of those things to make it come alive. I think that the power of storytelling is so important because we have such vivid, colorful stories about real world experiences that have the ability that if we paint them on a broad enough canvas, everyone can find themselves in that story. That's what we really want. We want a human connection, okay? We can Google anything. I can Google and know something, you know, as fast as I can type and read. Creating and honing the ability, however, to really see the impact that I'll have, to really see a mental picture of what that could look like, to begin to replace the story I'm telling and find a story in your own life where you've noticed that, right? It sparks our curiosity. Why is curiosity important? Because that is what's going to drive us to find those new innovations and solutions, those new terminologies, those new words and phrases that are going to help electrify the people that are around us. But we can't get that if we don't talk about the stories. We can't get that if we don't paint a picture where people can see themselves as the hero and as the person who might need to be saved. We're every character in the story at some point. At whatever your level is. And that is the most common denominator that we can find in this work that we do. You know, is the commonality of the story. might be different characters, might be different economic status, might be different race. The core of the story is the same. The hero's journey is a framework that has been around for years because that's the way that it goes. And so storytelling, I get a lot into it. I tell a lot about my own personal journey because I believe that I had the privilege of having those opportunities of being Black, of being a woman, of being a lesbian, of having all of these experiences so that I can tell my story and add to the beautiful canvas that is the human experience.
Amen. Amen.
God bless you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's so fun. Yeah, that's so
back. Like I said, more sessions, please.
Yeah. Absolutely. So we are quickly starting to run out of time. And what I'd like you to do is, what is that call to action? People who are listening to this, or some people will be just listening to it, some people will actually be watching it. What is that call to action that you would like to throw out to those individuals?
Yes. So there's one call to action that I like to ask everyone. I like to ask everyone this call to action. And the call to action is, when was the last time that you asked yourself what you are doing and who you are willing to do that thing for? If we can start by just creating a practice of reflection for how we showed up, that's what my call to action is for you. Take some time at the end of every call you have at work, or at the end of the day, if that works better for you. But at some point in your day, take a moment to create the practice of stepping back and really examining what you did and what you said and why you did it. Okay. And it's not for you to have a conversation with anyone else about, but it is for you to have a conversation with yourself about, and then begin to make some decisions and choices about how you can get better the next time. Okay. And if we can just start right there,
wow,
everything changes. Okay. Everything changes. That small shift. It's about the small shift. It's not about raising the money. It's not about talking to your local politician. It's not about, you know, getting another program into your community. We've done it. What if we change the approach to what am I doing and who am I willing to do it for? And then the next call to action I'll have is to check out our website, Sankofa Leadership. We have an ebook over there that goes into person-centered coaching a little deeper. We give some tools for you to use for that kind of reflective practice, you know, really thinking about the types of questions that you're asking so that you can track your behaviors and support you as you make that change. And then also, I would invite anyone who's looking to dig even deeper into these concepts of person-centered coaching and understand the skills and the approaches that go along with having these collaborative and transformative conversations, please consider joining our 5-week learning journey around the coaching mindset. That is available now. You can register now. The next session starts on the 10th of October, and we have one of those sessions every quarter, and it's practitioners across many different fields. They come together, and then we do some work, we learn some concepts, and then they go into a room and do some practice. And we do that for 5 weeks. So if that's something you're interested in, I encourage you to check out our website. And that's all I have.
Is that for regular people or just coaches?
That's for anyone.
Okay.
That's for anyone. We say coaching because the hope is that you will be able to support someone else in the realization of their wholeness at the end of it.
Yeah. All right. Great. Thanks.
Excellent. So Mavis, Gail, any final thoughts or comments yourselves?
Go ahead, Gail. I have a fun.
I'm so impressed with who you are and what you have done in finding your own truth and finding, really looking in that mirror and seeing yourself and really making choices that have not just allowed you to grow, but you've helped so many people. It's just incredible.
Thank you.
I second that for sure. You know, a while back you said it's not important for you to tend someone else's garden. The important thing is to plant the seed. And that is fortuitous because my organization is called Seed a Better Life. And we named the organization that way because we want to plant those seeds, but not say how your life should be. Anybody's life, mine, yours, anyone's life can be a bit better. So I just love the idea of a seed, and I'm believing, you know, for acorns to turn into huge oaks. So I just wanted to share that with you. I love that metaphor.
Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent. Gail, your final thoughts?
Well, I share that. I keep thinking about how, when I look back at my own practice and things that I've always been trying to discover myself has been based on truth. What is the truth? And those questions that you keep talking about and how crucial that is. It's just the challenge of belief systems. Our beliefs create our thoughts, our feelings, our behavior. You want to change that behavior, you've got to change that belief that creates it, right? And you are doing that and a million times over, and which is just so crucial to helping people really empower themselves. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Amen. I apologize, Gail, because you did give your final thoughts.
That's okay. I'll do all I need to
hear. Final thoughts.
Okay, those are your final thoughts. Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. So at this point, I'd like to close out with this quote. I usually, at the end of the program, will close out with a quote. And this quote actually comes from Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, who is an author. And this is her, what she says: many stories matter. Stories have been used to dispossess and to malign, but stories can also be used to empower and to humanize. Stories can break the dignity of a people, but stories can also repair that broken dignity. So I usually have the final quote relate back to the Cairo question. Will Cairo have to protest in his lifetime for the birthright to freely and peacefully exist in the skin in which he was born? So that's the question that all of this work that we do, Inflection Podcast, is based on that question. But my question to those listening, my question to our audience is this: what will you do to ensure that children have the right to freely and peacefully exist in the skin in which they were born? So it's not just about my grandson, and it's not just about what I'm doing or what Mavis is doing or Gail or what Fran is doing. It's also about you holding that mirror up to yourself and making a decision about what you are going to do to ensure a different future for our children. So I want to thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time at Inflection Point Podcast right here on Transformation Talk Radio. We are here every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and we'll see you on the next episode. Thank you for listening to Inflection Point Podcast, where our mantra is cultivating change from the inside out. The journey towards anti-racism and social change doesn't stop here. Truth, reconciliation, and healing come from ongoing, open, honest, and deliberate conversations. Continue to dive in and deconstruct your thoughts, ideas, and beliefs as we band together to manifest social change. Tune in to Inflection Point Podcast every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on TransformationTalkRadio.com for more conversations about how we can cultivate change from the inside out.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers.